together, talked about being so free.
Welcome to With Milk and Sugar, UK edition,
where we drink coffee with people so you can get to know them.
So it's finally there. We're releasing our UK podcasts.
Our three UK editions, and today is the first establishment. I'm quite excited about it because we just did our new intro and it's super weird to hear ourselves talking in English, which is quite a challenge. It was quite a challenge.
Yeah, it was quite a challenge. And it was quite a challenge being kind of a failed holiday and then doing a podcast in a surrounding we're not used to. Mm-hmm. That was kind of weird. Yeah. In between was Christmas.
Yeah. So Merry Christmas, everybody. We hope you spent a lovely holiday with your loved ones.
Yeah. I got a little cold. That's why I'm sounding quite funny.
I'm pretty sure you sound better than you have before when your cold started. No, not ever.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So the story is, we went to the UK. It was Christiane's birthday and Christmas gift to fly to the UK. And we visited three people for the recordings. The first we visited was Ian.
Mm-hmm. Then we went to Reading to visit Tom.
And then we went to Tunbridge Wells to visit my cousin.
Which was extra special, I think.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. Talking to Dave about what he does for work and how it's for him to live in the UK was a little weird, because usually when you talk to your relatives, it's like, yeah, between dinner and food and drinks, but being in a hotel lobby with people walking by, talking about life decisions he made was kind of weird a little.
Yeah, we said it before in different podcasts that it's always weird to talk to people you know on a different level, kind of, where you don't really talk about their work or their life situations or their choices they made or their love life or I don't know what, but you get to know them a bit differently, and especially with relatives.
Yeah, but it was very good and it was very interesting, and it gave an insight into Dave's work, Dave's family, and why he went to the UK.
I think I really enjoyed talking to him, because we didn't really have to talk that much. He was quite talkative, which is very, very good. I always enjoy it when our guests are so open to the podcast and so open to share their story with us.
True, yeah. I mean, yeah, true. But so for people who don't know our podcast, it's in German, Mit Milch und Zucker.
Normally, yes.
Normally, yes. Which is in English, With Milk and Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Christiane, do you want to tell the story behind With Milk and Sugar?
The story behind With Milk and Sugar. Well, in Austria, or especially in Vienna, it is common that when you get to know someone a bit better and you invite them for coffee, the first question you ask them is, how do you drink your coffee? Do you drink it with milk and sugar? Or just milk or just sugar? And that's kind of like a... It's a question that kind of marks the next step in the relationship, from we're like people who know each other to we're becoming friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we called the podcast With Milk and Sugar, or Mit Milch und Zucker.
Yeah. And there's a blog as well.
There's a blog as well, which will be in English for those three episodes.
And yeah, we're doing this podcast for over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Every week a new episode. We never skipped a week.
We never skipped a week. We have a few best-of episodes. We have some special episodes. We did actually do a different podcast in English where we went to the Secret Festival.
True.
And talked to different people around the world why they want to, or why they came to the Secret Festival.
So true. Yeah. And so Dave's going to be the first of the three podcasts. The other two will come soon.
Soon.
Soonish. yeah, but it was really interesting, and it was really special for all these people to take time, talk to us without knowing what our podcast is all about. And yeah, so we hope you enjoy it. And yeah, maybe there will be a second UK edition at some point.
Pretty sure there will be. Welcome back to With Milk and Sugar, or Mit Milch und Zucker, as we say it in German. We are, I think, in our last installment of our international visit to other people. And today's guest is Dave. Hi.
Hi.
Brenda is with me as well.
Hi.
The funny thing about Dave, or the interesting thing about Dave, probably plenty of interesting things about you.
Maybe.
Which
we'll see.
We will talk about. But you and Brenda are cousins.
That's yeah. Right.
You're the first of my family to be on our podcast.
Yeah, now
hey.
Yay!
Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, I'm excited.
The rest of my family was like, no.
No.
No. No, you will be the pioneer.
I am the sucker.
You can
you
say
just,
no, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have a problem saying no to things. I
really?
Guess, I guess we're experiencing that today.
So to your person, your name's Dave, as I established before.
Yes.
You're 40 years old and an HR business partner for the London Stock Exchange, currently in Bucharest.
Currently in Bucharest, that's
perfect.
Right. Well, currently in Tunbridge Wells, but currently
yeah.
In Bucharest.
Yeah, working
and
in Bucharest.
Approaching my last week in Bucharest after being there for about 18 months.
So, how's your Romanian?
Better than when I got there.
Okay.
But still not good enough to have a conversation with someone.
Okay.
Little bits and pieces
mm-hmm.
I can pick up. But like with French
yeah.
and German, I've studied it
yeah.
and
lost
with
it.
Romanian, I lost it. But what I find when I'm traveling with French and German
yeah.
and with Romanian now, if I have a moment to like pause and read something,
yeah.
I can usually get it,
yeah.
but I can't have my brain just can't move quickly
okay.
enough to have a conversation with someone. So.
I'm very good at swearing in Romanian.
Excellent, really.
Yeah.
Try me.
Yeah, no, not
no,
with
no,
my podcast.
No,
no,
no. Okay,
I do that.
Okay,
all
right. Yeah.
So I have our subject for today.
Okay.
And we went that creative because we had the one for all to read it in the UK now.
Yeah.
And it's tea time. What I love about the UK.
Okay.
And for you, it's special because you're actually Canadian.
I am Canadian.
And you moved here.
I did.
And you're too English.
I am too British. I am.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I was
it's
born
all.
I was born in England, raised in Canada, and then moved
came back.
Back.
And yeah, we have a lot of family stories about the UK.
Yes. Well,
I've been talking about a couple of last days.
Yeah.
Like. Going through Sunningdale and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and we thought it might be interesting as coming to Britain as somebody who wasn't living here
yeah.
and starting new here.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought that would be an interesting
yeah.
topic.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I like it.
And we can talk about the wrong side of the road. Of the road.
Well, yeah, that I've had to adjust to twice now because I went, obviously coming here,
yeah.
had to adjust from Canada.
Yeah.
Then going to Bucharest, they drive on the
right-hand
side of the road, not the correct side, the right-hand okay. side, as they would say. And then having to adjust back now
yeah.
to the left-hand mm. side. So.
Yeah, so but we're going to talk about all that later.
Yes.
Now questions to go.
Cool.
Are you ready?
Is that the first question? Yes.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, what statistics for your life would you most like to see?
Statistics for my life? Ooh. That's interesting. Anything at all? I don't know. That's a tough one.
We thought we'll
stress,
start
easier.
Yeah,
stress. It's not going to get any easier. No. Stress levels over my life. I don't know. That's tough. What have other people said? Give me ideas.
Time commuting,
right.
Spend in traffic, and
watching sports.
Yeah, for me, maybe it would be then, how much time have I wasted playing video games? Because I would see a really interesting up and down there
yeah.
With a massive spike in kind of 1998 to 2002.
Okay.
When I was in university,
yeah.
and the amount of time I spent playing video games with my housemates as opposed to studying, which I mean I'm doing all right, so it wasn't that much wasted, but yeah, I think that would be interesting
yeah.
because it would be pretty consistent up until March 19th 2013, which was the day that Charlotte was born, and after that there would be a precipitous fall off until I spent the first 3 months here
yeah.
in the UK by myself while Jen, my wife, was getting her visa. then it would skyrocket to pretty much multiple hours every day. Then back down again when she arrived, rightfully so, but probably not enough to please her completely. And then skyrocket back up when I was in Bucharest by myself. So this is really just showing what I do. If I'm left completely to my own devices, I will just get myself playing video games. So, yeah, fun. So, yeah, that would be it then. Yeah, I guess.
I have the next question. What's one responsibility you really wish you didn't have?
The perfect thing for me would be if just all the money stuff just went away. Mm-hmm. So being having to work to earn a salary, I would, you know, magic bullet, win the lottery type of thing. Mm-hmm. Just because there's so much stuff I'd rather be doing. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't love my job. I mean, I do. I mean, I like it enough to obviously still be doing it. But I was never really driven towards doing what I'm doing out of a love for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just kind of fell into it because it was convenient and I seemed to be able to do it well. Mm-hmm. So if I could just do whatever, that kind of responsibility for kind of having that good job to be able to have a comfortable life for my family, that could melt away and I could just kind of do whatever I wanted, I would probably be doing something very different. So, yeah.
Might come up.
What would you be doing? Now I have to start thinking about that.
Well, I have a different question first.
Yeah.
What's your favorite smell?
Whoa. Oh, that is a difficult one. You know, we're getting into the Christmas season now, and so there's a lot of very festive smells around, and those always kind of drive me nuts. But I would have to go with pretty much the most basic one that just whenever I smell it, I will get happy, which is just bacon cooking. You know, if there's cooking bacon somewhere, or there's bacon cooking somewhere, that would be it. If you could get that in a candle, I would have that on all the time. I am very much led by my stomach and bacon cooking, absolutely.
That's a
sure.
Gene we share.
The food gene, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
If all jobs had the same pay and hours, what job would you have?
And I could, and it doesn't require a skill level.
No, it's
that I.
No.
I can just do anything.
Whatever you like.
Everything I like. I would drive trains. I would be a train driver here in England as well.
Okay.
I would absolutely love to do that. I love trains. I love traveling on trains. Something that my father and I share. I love looking at trains. We went on a Santa special train ride last weekend, which was good fun. And I would love to be an engineer and drive trains. I think that to me would be, you know, this is going to be embarrassing but I'll say it anyway. Like, I have actually watched like an hour long YouTube video that is just a train driver's view going between London and Brighton.
I think that too, but
But there are those out there. So there's other weird people like me out there too. but if like all things being equal, if I could do one thing right now, I would drive trains. That would be fun. That'd be super fun. Yeah.
Which place in the UK should everybody visit at least once?
Cornwall. I love Cornwall. We were just down there in October. And the only other time that I've been down in Cornwall was probably when I was about 12, 14 years old or something. And it was on a school trip. Mm-hmm. We went to Land's End, and that's the only thing I could remember about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two places. And so I might change my answer later, because there's two places in the UK that I haven't visited that I've always wanted to. One was Cornwall, and the other is North Wales.
Okay.
To go explore North Wales, especially because they have some amazing heritage railways up there. But I could go on. But Cornwall, to me, was a really nice surprise. I've heard lots about it from friends and from some people that I know that have grown up there. And when we went down there, it combines so much of the great stuff that you find in the UK all in one place. Really beautiful rolling hills, lovely farmland, beautiful coast, amazing seafood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just really lovely. Really lovely part of the world.
Yeah.
So we went down there, and there's a little town of a fishing village called Mevagissey. And we literally did a very stereotypical thing, which is just sat on the side of the quay, ate fish and chips, and threw nets in with little bits of fish to catch crabs.
Oh, wow.
And my daughter Charlotte just absolutely loved it, drawing up these things with all these crabs in it. The people that were next to us caught an eel, which was just,
ooh,
I mean, really neat. So anyway, I mean, that might be a bit of recency bias, but if you were to ask me if I was to go on a trip somewhere within the UK, take a drive and go down somewhere or go somewhere, it would be down into Cornwall.
But as our history, what answer do we have to give?
Bracknell, of course.
Yeah.
You have to see Bracknell. You have to experience Britain at its best.
Yeah. But I'm always telling everybody that Harry Potter's from there. So
that's true. Yeah.
So I remember, it is special.
It is special. And I've done that walk from Granddad's house to the Harry Potter house, of course, a couple of times. But yeah, no, it's Bracknell was our childhood a little bit in the UK. That's pretty much where I exclusively saw you, except for one trip to Vienna, I think, that we did.
Yeah. But we first met in Sunningdale. We talked about that yesterday.
Sunningdale,
Because my family from Austria and you're from Canada.
Yeah.
We never could stay together in the UK because of like house and people. So the first time we met, we were quite old.
Yeah.
Because we were like 14 or something. I was 14 or something.
But we had met when we were really young, though.
Yeah, but we can't remember that.
No, of course not.
No.
We have pictures.
Yeah.
I believe we're naked in some of them. That goes to show.
So
how young
I was just about to ask, can we have them for the blog?
Maybe not.
But it's a nice one with our moms and granddad and granny.
Yeah.
And the children sitting like
That one along the wall.
Yes.
Now, this is meaning a lot to everyone listening to this.
But there are two missing on the picture because it went born then.
Yeah.
So
they came along. Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah. So Bracknell,
we went there yesterday.
Yeah. What were your impressions of Bracknell?
I didn't see a lot of it. I saw some.
You probably saw enough of it though.
The train station, and then there was this square where we went for food.
That was Reading.
That was Reading. Well,
okay,
Reading is nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Bracknell
was
just the train station.
Yeah. Train station. So. And then a little emotional breakdown on my side.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I haven't
and
been
then
back
went
to
through,
since Granddad passed away, and I think I would. It would be difficult.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
It was.
It would be difficult.
Yeah.
So.
So let's.
Let's
on
move,
to the next
let's
question.
Move on. Let's move on.
And that's a good one.
Yeah.
You love it. What's your favorite British food and drink?
So I do love a pie. So, like a steak and Stilton pie, with mashed potatoes and gravy. Yeah, you can't really go wrong with that.
Yeah.
I would say that for sure. If I was pies.
Yeah.
Give me pies. Anything with pastry and meat is good enough for me. So yeah.
And drink.
Oh, and drink. Well, I do. I mean, you can't eat a real British ale, you know. So beer.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And I have a last question here.
Last one.
Which is, I'm thankful for
your lovely family. Oh, come on. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I would say a fairly close family compared to a lot of other people that I know that don't. You know, I especially, my relationship that I have with my sisters and my parents is lovely. With you guys is lovely as well, even though I don't really see you as much as I probably should. But I love having a close-knit family. So I'm very thankful for that.
Well, first part is done. Really, really good. Well done.
Oh, thank you.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Not too bad, not too shabby.
No. Okay. Somewhere in the middle. That's good.
Yeah, we have a rating system.
Oh,
no.
Is that at the end?
No.
Do I get to find out?
Just tell other people what you said.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
No, that's just a joke. It's really a joke.
We don't have a rating system. But on with the first main question, our typical with milk and sugar question, and that is, what is or was a good coffee for you?
Now, does that, so that's going to be a lot about kind of the the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's not as well, right? It can be a coffee that tasted really good, but it's mostly with coffee.
Yeah.
Like the atmosphere you're drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you remember best.
Yeah.
Because of the circumstances.
Yeah. Mm. Because I've had some. In Bucharest, they have some really good coffee there.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that the atmosphere I was in was the most conducive to making it the best coffee that I've ever had.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is coming back to me, but there is a coffee shop in Windsor in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this has just come to me, that I can remember the coffee and I can remember where we were. But we were in Windsor. I think the coffee shop is called Esquire's. And I think they've got a few locations around. But I just remember it because we had just met up. We had just come back to the UK visiting. I was there with my older sister, Alice, and her two boys were there. My wife, Jen, was there. And I remember we were just sitting having a coffee and a little pastry or something. And I had just, you know, an Americano or something like that. And the boys were running around and, you know, creating a bunch of noise as they love to do. And yeah, I remember that particular moment because it felt really good to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was before Jen and I moved to the UK. And I think it was one of those moments that I had before we had moved to the UK where I kind of thought, this is where I want to be.
Yeah.
And that's, for some reason, that sticks out to me. And the coffee was really good too. So, there we go.
Was it weird for you moving here? Like, I think it's difficult when you move somewhere where you're used to spend holidays.
Yeah.
Because it's, I guess, different.
Yeah, it is different. And you kind of have to, you know, you have to mentally prepare yourself that you've only been here on holiday.
Yeah.
So you're always going to be in a different kind of mindset when you're here, because you're going to be, you know, going out to restaurants, you're going to be going around seeing stuff. It's different than living somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But for us, and I know for me in particular, it had always been there. I had always felt like I had wanted to live here and actually, you know, experience it beyond, you know, being on a holiday. So when we first moved here, there was definitely a lot of adjustment. I mean, I was here by myself for 3 months, and that was difficult because Charlotte was really young at that point. She was just over a year old. So, you know, I was spending a lot of time with, you know, on Skype with her and stuff. But actually moving here, it settled in rather quickly, I would say. But there was, you know, little things that you have to get used to. One of the biggest adjustments for us, and things to wrap our minds around, is how the school system works here.
Okay.
It's very different to in Canada about, you know, how you try to, you know, different schools, they're all based on a rating system, and you have to go and try to get your kid into the best school, and blah, blah, blah. You know, so there's, I didn't find the adjustment that hard, but there's definitely some things that you're just kind of like, this is different, and it's a bit weird here. But for the most part, when I moved here, I felt relatively comfortable, probably because, you know, I got to see my family quite a lot, because obviously granddad was still alive. You guys would come to visit quite a lot. Your mom would come to visit quite a lot. My mom would be around quite a lot as well. So it's not like I was jumping into somewhere that was completely different without any support. So I think once I got past that, I'm not on holiday here, it started to settle in, you know, relatively easily. And I think the one thing that made it a lot easier for me was I was coming over here for a job, and I started work pretty much straight away. So there was no real time to kind of, you know, lose my focus or anything like that. It was like, I've got this to do. I've got to get to, you know, I have a few days, then I start work. I've got to get adjusted to that. And then I have to think about how, you know, to get Jen and Charlotte over here as quickly as possible. Got to find a place to live, da 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 da. So it all just kind of, there was so much going on. That just all of a sudden, you know, a few months later when they were here, it was like, well, yeah, it, you kind of look back and it's like, oh yeah, completely comfortable. Yeah.
What would you do differently when you would do it again? Like, especially coming to the UK?
Yeah, I don't know. I think probably take a little bit more time to find the right place to live.
Okay.
Because having to move about is quite inconvenient. And when we first moved over, we made decisions on where to live based on mainly to out of what's in our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So we chose a place that's kind of on the west end, west side of London, out towards on the rail line that goes out to Bracknell.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to be able to get, yeah. I mean, it sounds silly, but we wanted to get to Bracknell easily to visit Grandad. So when we first arrived, we stayed in, we rented a place in Richmond. And Richmond is lovely, but it's damn expensive, right? And, you know, we had a nice little cottage, but it was tiny, right? So there was too much of, we just need to get there and get a place, right? Mm-hmm. And that led to us having to move at the end of that lease because it was too expensive, there wasn't enough space, mm-hmm. and while the area was really nice, we didn't particularly love living there, and we wanted to live somewhere that had a bit of a different feel for us. Mm-hmm. So if I was to do it all over again, it would probably to be a bit of, you know, take a bit more care,
yeah.
in defining the right place for us. So obviously now we live in Tunbridge, well outside of the city, which is more of our kind of feel, but moving over here, you know, it would have taken a lot of research to be, yeah. able to land on the fact that actually this is a good place for us.
So. Yeah. Does it maybe also have to do with the language, because it's both English, because now you live,
yeah.
in Bucharest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't speak Romanian, so no. I figured that's,
yeah.
also a,
well,
big,
yeah.
part of,
yeah, yeah,
why,
yeah.
you settled in quite quickly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it obviously took a lot longer in Bucharest to settle in, but a lot of people in Bucharest do speak English. But definitely, you know, no language barrier at all here. You just, you know, have to deal with the fact that people just assume you're an American at first. And actually had to do that similarly in Bucharest. I remember I went to summer of 2018. I broke a small bone in my hand, mm-hmm. while I was in Bucharest, and I went to a medical clinic, and the doctor there was giving me a bit of a hard time, like he wasn't being fairly. And then finally he asked me a question about Trump.
Okay.
And I said, I said, well, I can tell you what I think, but I'm not American, just so you know.
Team Justin.
I'm Canadian, and all of us, well, don't get me started on Justin. So that's, yeah. but then his attitude changed. Don't pout at me. but his attitude, yeah, changed after that. And that's just that was a, yeah, funny thing.
But compared to Trump.
Compared to Trump, yes. No,
yeah,
I mean, just, you know, it's not.
And
it's
Trump's not, here, so.
Yeah, no, I know. I know that there's a lot of really good things about Justin. But I find him to be a bit of, I can't swear on the podcast, but he's a bit of an ass.
Okay.
He's a bit of an ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's different because growing up in Canada, we were exposed to Justin Trudeau.
Okay, yeah. Mm, yeah.
While we were growing up, when he wasn't a politician, when he was just the son of a prime minister,
yeah.
and a bit of a brat, if,
yeah.
I'm honest, right?
Yeah, yeah, true.
So that,
yeah.
yeah.
The thing is that the only things we get in Austria from Justin Trudeau is just,
oh,
the,
yeah.
all
the great
wonderful,
stuff. Yeah, yeah,
he's,
yeah.
the great,
yeah.
nice person,
yeah. Yeah.
with,
yeah.
Emmanuel Macron.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
all,
yeah.
these stupid,
yeah,
people.
Yeah, of course. Which,
so.
I mean, in comparison, yes. And we don't have to start on the leaders here. Which,
yeah.
I mean, I mean, obviously the election is this coming Thursday.
Are you allowed to vote here?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So I've got a postal vote, which I haven't filled out yet, but I have to do today.
Yeah.
And I'm still,
yeah.
I'm still wavering.
We learned,
yeah.
yesterday,
mm-hmm.
just to bring in our,
yeah.
knowledge we have now, that postal voting in the UK is mostly older people do that.
Then mostly older people do it, but anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And actually, it's really convenient. So
yeah.
The entire time I've been here, even when I've been here in the UK to be able to vote, I do a postal vote,
mm-hmm.
because it's just more convenient than going down to a,
yeah,
postal station. They send it to you ahead of time. You just fill it in. You know, envelopes there ready for it. You just pop it in there.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
yeah.
So I have the next question here for you.
Yeah.
Big question.
Big one. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And this is, which people and or experiences had a significant impact on your life?
That's tough because obviously there's a lot. You,
yeah,
know,
you
know, can talk about, you know, obviously my parents, you know, my family, my sisters, my wife, you know, so many people have had a massive impact. If I have to think about there being a person that did something that put me in a direction,
mm-hmm.
that put me on a path to where I am now. I would say it's my godfather, Michael List, who is business he did previously. I don't know if, I think he's retired now. He was like an executive coach, and he also helped people when they were let go of a position. Okay. He helped them. Mm-hmm. He was like an outplacement person, yeah, a counselor, basically. And I was at a point in my life where I really didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. You know, I came out of university, you know, I did a year as like a junior teacher, then decided I didn't want to go to teacher's college after that. You know, I worked in Starbucks for a while. I had a very short stint as a line cook in a restaurant. I worked golf course maintenance, which I actually really, really enjoyed. And then I worked in, and then I worked in the mailroom of a mutual fund company, which eventually led into a junior sales position, which I hated. And it was at that point in my life where I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I remember the one thing he did for me, well, so there are two things. He gave me a book called Who Moved My Cheese, which seems a bit of a corny title, but Who Moved My Cheese is all about how you deal with change in your life.
Oh, that's interesting,
and it's, yeah. And I've encountered other people who that book has really helped them quite a lot. Who Moved My Cheese? He gave me that. And then we met a few times. So I read it. You can read it in, you know, an hour and a half. It's not War and Peace, right? But it's very helpful because it kind of changes your mindset a little bit about how you deal with change and how you can go from fearing change or dreading change or whatever it is to actually seeking out change and embracing it as well, which was really helpful for me. The second thing that he did is I was talking about what I wanted to do, and there was I was working in a company, and the only interesting job I could see around me was the job of the HR director. It was a small company, so she was doing everything. She was doing, you know, interviewing receptionist positions up to doing, you know, senior leadership, compensation, all that type of stuff. She was doing end to end all of that stuff, and I thought that was really interesting because you got to do so much different stuff in that role. You were touching on so many different things. No day would be the same. It's not just going in and, you know, doing the same thing repetitively, which was what I was doing in this kind of junior sales position. And so I was talking about what I wanted to do, and maybe that would be interesting, and da-da-da-da. And he basically, I don't know if he just got frustrated with me waffling about or something like that, but he basically told me to just shut up and do something about it. Mm-hmm. Like, get off your ass. Stop. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what you want to do. Just get about doing it.
Yeah.
And that led me to my parents, who are within earshot, probably are shuddering at this decision, but I quit my job. I signed up for a year-long, like, an HR management program at Humber College in Toronto. Did that, and then came out, and within a few months got a part-time contract that led to a full-time contract that led to or a fixed-term contract that then led to another fixed-term contract that then led to a permanent role, and then that was just, and then that's been my career, which has been helpful for me because, you know, obviously I was without direction. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and there was a little glimmer and hope of being able to do something that I at least, you know, thought I could be good at.
Yeah.
And he basically said, well, just go and do it then. And it was, you know, if you ever met him, you would know that that's kind of his personality. He would just kind of say, here's a boot in your ass and go and do it. So I've said ass 4 times now.
It's fine.
Okay, ass is good.
It's no problem.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
We can always do explicit podcast.
Okay.
No. But did it change for you for that decision or for more decisions to come?
More decisions.
Easier to change.
No, exactly. Yeah, and that was the big thing. The dealing with change became easier for me. You know, when I. You know, so there's a series of kind of fixed-term contracts. Just a few of them led to me spending up to close to 5 years at TMX Group, which is the Toronto Stock Exchange. And I reached a point there where I realized I wasn't really learning anymore, and there wasn't an opportunity for me to learn anymore. I was kind of going through the same cycle, you know, and I realized, you know, if I want to continue to grow and learn stuff, I'm going to have to change companies. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that would have probably been a difficult decision, because it was comfortable. You know, I was comfortable in what I was doing. But I think facing that decision for me became a lot easier, because mm-hmm. I knew that if I was the whatever change would come would be really good. So I started looking out for roles, and there was a role at a company that I had done a contract for before. I knew someone there, and within about a month I had a job offer from them, and I was just like, perfect, up and go. And so it helped. But overall, I think about the amount of change that I've been through in my life, moving countries a couple of times, right? Almost moving, we were super, super close, to moving to Sri Lanka for 2 years as well, right? So, I found that it led me into a position that if there was an opportunity and a change to be made, I would automatically be welcoming it, to kind of say, that would be really great. I don't know what would come out of it, but that would be a really good opportunity, so let's do it.
I think it's really, a really good way to live your life, is to accept the change is good.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
Yeah.
But, for example, if somebody would offer you a really interesting job in a country, like, not Sri Lanka, but say, like, I don't know, really far away.
Really far away.
Like, well, Australia or New Zealand. Or a country where you don't know a lot of...
Well, this is interesting, because there was while working at London Stock Exchange Group, one of the things that I was working on there was the company acquires a lot of other companies, mm-hmm. and they acquired a company that had an office in Fort Mill, South Carolina, and strangely enough in a place called Kuching in Malaysia, which is on the island of Borneo.
Everybody has a song now on the
mountain. Yeah. So I was lucky enough to be able to go out to Kuching, which is not easy to get to. You have to go to Kuala Lumpur, and then you have to fly an hour and a half from there to Kuching. And it's in Malaysia, but it's treated very differently. It's almost like its own, it's a province called Sarawak. It's its own little province. And I got there, and the food is amazing, the weather's fantastic, the people are really friendly, there's really a lot of really great stuff to be able to go out and see, exploring. The people in the office were super friendly, everybody was, it was all really great. And then I remember coming back and just thinking that was, fantastic experience. And the person that in the company that was kind of overseeing everything was looking for someone to essentially from the group go down and be a general manager in the office. And in one very random discussion, he kind of mentioned, not being seriously like offering it to me, but said, testing kind of like, is that, I think that might be something that you could be quite good at. Mm-hmm. And the discussion, there was no further discussion on it. So it wasn't something that was actually really a possibility, mm-hmm. but it did make me think. And because, it's really isolated.
Yeah.
It's really far away. I would love to have done it, but I don't know if in the end I would have done it, because it would have been so far away, really, really far away.
It's probably when you're doing your 20s, like,
whatever. Exactly. Yeah.
But I think if you start having to think of schools and healthcare
Probably not. Yeah.
It gets a different decision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But again, back to the whole, being on vacation somewhere versus living somewhere, it could be very different too. Not that I was on vacation, I was working. even though a lot of
my... Do you have to tell people that?
Well, no, it's there's this, obviously this concept here of what they call in the UK of going on a jolly, which means you're going on a work trip, but you're not really doing much work, right? You're really just kind of, it's FaceTime, and then you're really out having fun. And I did have a lot of fun, but we were definitely working. We were definitely working.
And there's one question.
Yeah.
I think your sisters want me to ask you.
Okay.
I didn't ask them, but
okay.
We've been at that point before in the discussion.
I know the question.
Is when you go in the morning in your office, what are you really doing?
Okay. Yeah. So that,
we discussed it.
That's a good question. It's difficult to describe my job, because as a business partner, what you're supposed to be doing is delivering. So maybe I'll explain it this way.
Mm-hmm.
There's within HR, there's the people that do all the specialist activity. You have your recruiters, you have people that do compensation, you have people that do employee relations, you know, people that do organizational design, and they're very, very good and specialists in their field.
Yeah.
And obviously, and then talent stuff is a big one too, you know, learning and development and executive development, all of that. So the business, as we call it, everything outside of HR, requires the services of those people to be able to advise them on their org design, to be able to help them with development programs, to help them through processes such as, you know, compensation reviews, all of that. So I sit in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I use the expertise of those people to deliver those services to the different businesses that I work with,
but in
a way that works for them.
Yeah.
So my job is to understand the business need, take that back to the HR specialists and the people that know what they're doing, and make sure that they can deliver it and we can deliver it in a way that helps them, but also in help the people in HR understand what's going on in the different businesses. Because you can have let's say you want to have a manager development program, you really want to improve the management skill. To different businesses, that might mean different things depending on where they are, you know, so that we might have, so a good example would say in London Stock Exchange Group, we have a capital markets business, and that's the business that generates the listings on the exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out and try to get companies to list on the exchange, or they run the trading facilities as well. They, you know, so that's core business for an exchange, really. But then we also have a technology business, and within that, a huge infrastructure team where people, you know, have to understand, you know, the networks behind everything. IT generally.
Yeah.
Their needs are very different.
Yeah.
But when the people, let's say, in the team that is developing that program, they'll look at it mostly with an HR mindset.
Yeah.
So my job is to help them understand, if you want to deliver that, here's how it will land best with them. And so it's almost like I'm a middleman. I'm an intermediary.
True. Yeah.
So right now, a little different right now because I'm working on the build out of the Bucharest office. But I've done that job in London Stock Exchange for the capital markets business and for FTSE Russell, which is the index and benchmark business as well. So.
That's, I think it's really interesting because it's a lot about how to go further and do new things. So.
Yeah, and it's
different views.
Yeah, and for me, going back to one of the things that I found most interesting looking at it from afar when I was, you know, years and years and years ago, every day is different because it's usually dealing with issues. It's giving people advice. It's a manager or a senior leader saying, I have this problem. What can I do to solve it? And that might be me giving them advice based on what I've experienced in the past. It might be me saying, I know someone within the HR team or in some other part of the business that can help with that. So let's look into it.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
So, yeah.
But is it difficult to be the person who does always have to give good advice?
it is tough, especially when you struggle to find what the advice should be, right?
Yeah.
As you get more experienced, you experience different things, obviously, and you kind of build up a knowledge base of how to handle different situations. But at the end of the day, though, there's always, you know, a lot of really smart people around me that I work with, that I can go to and say, listen, we've got this situation, you know, what should we do? Or, you know, my boss, you know, who's, you know, has, you know, 25 years experience or so, you know, and, you know, she has done, I mean, incredible things within her HR career. You know, she set up an outsourcing center in India, lived in India for 2 years, you know, did something similar in the Philippines, I think. So in an organization like the one that I work for, which I really, really, really like, there's just lots of people with really interesting experience around that you can call on and say, you know, have you encountered something like this before? How can we work through this? So, yeah.
And if somebody's interested in going direction HR, like,
yeah.
What field do you think would be a good field to like start in or to progress to?
Yeah, well, so whenever, at some point in anybody's HR career, you're always faced with the fork in the road that is, do I become a generalist or do I become a specialist?
Mm-hmm.
So I would be a generalist, mm-hmm. But everyone I work with, for the most part, is a specialist. So for me, I guess knowing what you want to do within HR at the early on is an important thing. And if you don't know what you want to do, then be a generalist, because
mm-hmm.
you'll eventually get experience working in the different areas and you'll find what you want to do. But, you know, I think HR in some organizations has a bit of a bad rap because it's seen as just administration, or it's seen as being the nanny, you know, mm-hmm. the people that enforce the rules and that type of stuff. I think, personally, I've been very picky about the places that I work, because I want to work in a place where HR is seen as value add,
mm-hmm.
which is very difficult to quantify because we cost money, we don't make money,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in the businesses that I've worked with, you know, that's an important thing. So the organizations that I've looked at working with, I've always tried to find out how, what is the relationship between the business and HR, and if there is a good relationship there where HR is seen, quote unquote, as a trusted advisor and someone that can help the business, that's the type of place I want to work for. So that I think that's it. If you know what you want to, figure out what you want to do and try to find an organization that takes HR seriously, because you're going to have the most opportunity in those places to do interesting work.
Yes.
I find it this.
I think it's really interesting listening to your stories, because
yeah.
on the one hand, there's this pattern of doing things differently, changing, changing workplaces, changing locations where you live, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, in the beginning, at the questions ago, you said you want to be like a train driver,
yeah.
which is basically
being
in one spot at the same
time,
over and over
again. And maybe that's what I crave, because but it's funny because, you know, early on in your, when you're trying to figure yourself out and you're early on in your career, and everybody's, oh, well, you know, do those personality tests, that,
mm-hmm.
you know. One thing that's been consistent for me whenever I've done one of those or talked to people about them is that my and this might be complete BS, who knows, but I think it resonates with me, is I'm an introverted person, which to me means spending time with people and spending time around people drains me quite a lot, and I need alone and quiet time to kind of, you know, so I'm not someone that feeds off of a lot of heavy social interactions or something like that, and I've picked a career where that is absolutely necessary. Right?
It's just about people.
It is. So there's this concept of, you know, having to put a mask on at work, you know, because my job, for better or for worse, requires me to be something that is outside of my comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
or at least it drains me a lot of my energy. It takes a lot out of me. So the train driver thing might just be my ultimate dream of just being in my own little quiet box, watching rails come towards me, and I'm just, whew, you know. My retirement dream, I guess, or something like that. So
I have the next big question, that is, what are you proud of?
I hear a little voice in the next room. Really proud of my daughter. She's a fun little girl, and I never pictured myself being being a father that. Yeah, I never knew if I would be a good father, and I'm not saying that she proves that I am, but I'm proud of how adaptable she's been in all of this as well, because I've forced a lot of change on her, and she's just been rolling along with it. But yeah, that's a tough one. I guess I'm proud that I'm sitting here today,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people would, and this is, I feel uncomfortable talking about myself this way, but I think a lot of people faced with where my wife and I were, you know, just over 5 years ago, where Charlotte was just born. We had just bought a house in Canada. We were in a comfortable position. I was in a comfortable job working with people that I liked. And we put an end to all of that to take the risk of moving here. We sold the house. We moved into a temporary apartment. I gave myself a deadline that said, if I don't have a job by this in the UK by this date, then I'm just going to quit and I'm going to move over there and I'm going to try to find from there. And it was a huge risk. It was scary at times, for sure. And there was a lot of doubt in it. But it all ended up working out.
Yeah.
And right at the last minute, you know, it was, I had said that it was going to be the end of August 2014, or kind of September 2014, I think. And I was going to quit and I was going to come over to the UK and try to find a job. And by that time, we had sold the house. We were living in a temporary apartment. And then all of a sudden, in late May that year, a headhunter called me up about this opportunity at London Stock Exchange, did some VC interviews, flew over for a week in July, interviewing at London Stock Exchange, interviewing at the London Clearing House, which is part of the exchange group, and interviewing at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. I always get that wrong. And I left London that week on Friday with three job offers, which was just, it went from nothing happening to holy crap, we're going.
Yeah.
You know, and this is real, and we're now, you know, and I quit my job. My boss at my current job that I had there asked for more than 2 weeks' notice, which was the standard, so I gave her 2 weeks and 2 days' notice. She was not happy about that. But then came over, you know, lived with granddad for a few days, moved into a temporary apartment in London, right by Farringdon, and started working. And then, so I think that proving to myself that I could. And really, this should be that we could do it, that Jen and I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty proud of that. So
you should be proud of that.
Yeah,
you don't leave many questions. That's a problem.
Really?
Yeah, it's so perfect.
Oh, okay.
No, that's great. No, I laugh, and this is a lot easier.
Okay.
Which is what makes you laugh.
Oh. Now, can I talk about specific things? Because
whatever you like.
I have a very silly sense of humor, you know. So I do like kind of goofy things. The things that make me laugh currently at the moment the most are a couple of podcasts that I listen to. One is the Horn Section podcast with Alex Horn, which is really good. And the other one is, what's the name of it? I think it's Off Menu. This is the name of it, with James Acaster
you make somebody's really happy now.
I think James Acaster is hilarious, and Ed Gamble. James Acaster and Ed Gamble, where they do they bring on usually a comedian, but other people as well, and they and because it's food related, I enjoy it as well. But they talk about people's dream meal being a starter, a main, a dessert, a side dish, and a drink, and they can have anything that they want, and it's hilarious, and it is absolutely hilarious. So, but yeah,
You watch Taskmaster?
Love Taskmaster.
Yeah,
love
it's
Taskmaster.
So much
absolutely.
Humor. It's
yeah,
so good.
Yeah. So that's right up. Those types of things are right up my alley for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I do. I like goofy things.
Can you laugh about yourself?
Yes. Yes. With the white eyebrow, you have to. I mean, people can't see this, but my eyebrow turned white like 6 months after moving here, and you kind of have to
blame it on the Brits.
Blame it on the Brits. That's right. So yeah, no, I can definitely laugh about myself and find myself giving myself lots of opportunities to laugh about myself too.
Can you laugh about your children?
Yes, of course. Of course.
Do you laugh at your children?
I do laugh at my children too. Children do unintentionally hilarious things all the time. And some of the great joys about modern technology is to see your child doing something in your house and being able to text your wife about it and seeing her just howling with laughter on the other side of the room because what the little one's doing.
A friend of mine, her son is now three. she says it's so funny now because he gets really serious.
Oh, yeah,
and he stomps in the eyes like, I want that. And she's like, you have to turn around. And he, not laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
Being serious now.
No, it happens quite a lot that one parent is trying to be very stern and the other one is cracking up around the corner because it's too hilarious. Yeah, absolutely.
We're unfortunately at the end again of our podcast this week, but we have a few short questions left for you.
All right.
First one would be, is there anything else you want to share with our listeners?
But I think I've given some good recommendations so far. I mean,
definitely.
Who Moved My Cheese as a book?
Yeah, but I would have a look at that.
You should.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I wrote
right
away.
It's very good. And then you know, my podcast recommendations, I'll stand by those as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely. No, I can't. I can't really think of anything else other than, you know, if there's a theme, I guess it's just you know, embrace change or whatever it might be. Yeah, I don't want to. This isn't a preachy thing or anything like that. But that's the best piece of advice that I've ever gotten, and just I hope that maybe resonates with other people as well.
I think it will. It already did with me a lot
in
those
few
hours.
Good.
And I will put all of the links and downloads and Spotify stuff, everything in the show notes and in the blog so everyone can have a look at it.
Cool.
So I'm left here to say thank you. Thank you for putting
Thank you guys. No, this was a lot of
fun. It was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the rest of my family, that's really interesting.
Hi, everyone, by the way.
Thank you very much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
We spent the time in the hotel of your parents, who are currently staying over. We're waiting to go to lunch because with the Rumbles, it's all about food.
It's all about food, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's all about, like,
I approve that. That's fine.
Yeah.
And the last questions I have is, how do you drink your coffee now?
Just with a splash of milk.